The Eva Cahill Gael is Fáilte Grí Sports Centre, Scariff Bay Community Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. You're welcome once again to Scariff Bay Community Radio on 88.3 FM, 92.7 FM in association with Dell Credit Union. On today's show, I'm joined as always, co-presenter Pat McNamara. And our special guest this afternoon is well-known Clare journalist with the Clare Echo. Man, always very, very good to see you on Scariff Bay Community Radio. It's Pádraic McMahon. Pat, Pádraic, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks very much, Leo.
Pat, after all the talking and everything and preparation and championship is on us.
Yeah, it's Christmas, I suppose, for for hurling people. Look at how could you find a better fixture to start, seriously start this year's championship than the Clare Limerick one? I mean, I'd say nationally it's the most looked forward to game for a long, long time. Not to talk about followers in Clare and, of course, in Limerick. So much riding on it, I think. First of all, loss of 3 points in the first round can be very, very, very pressurising. Secondly, there's the old rivalry anyway. There's the feeling we should have beaten them last year's Munster final. There's also the fact that I suppose that we have them at home and with league champions and they're going for five in a row. So there's so many sideshows in this one. But basically, what it will boil down to on the day, I suppose, is, again, who makes the least mistakes. The intensity of the fight they'll bring to it. Can Clare, you know, limit some of Limerick's really strong points, which are, you know, unbelievable in terms of their team play, getting their points from 30, 40, 50, 60 yards, and, you know, choking up our attack, or can we just do what we did for at times in the league and again at many times during last year's round robin, and that is, can we just fly in there and start throwing scores from all angles, getting goals at vital times and just getting Limerick's faces. And I suppose the difference is Tony Kelly was starring last year as an example. We had Ryan Taylor as well a lot of the time early on, and we don't have those, at least we don't think we do anyway. So look, I know Pádraic will go into it in a lot more detail, but look, you couldn't wait for this one to come. It's coming tomorrow, and there'll be a packed house in Ennis, over 20,000 now, I believe. It's going to be some atmosphere. I hope the game doesn't let us down, but Clare Limerick games never, ever, I think, let us down, apart from one league game there in the par in Gaelic Ground a couple of years back. But so much to look forward to, and certainly I think it's, we'll talk about it in some detail, but I think it certainly is winnable for Clare. I think winning the league will give a boost of confidence and show, you know, that we're up there and that we have a style of play that suits us and that we have a bigger panel than we ever had, at least for a long time, with fellas aren't maybe performing, there's lads to come in who can make a difference. So all that comes into it. But having said that, Limerick are Limerick, so they're not going for five in a row for nothing. So really, really massive game, Leo.
Yeah, massive game, there's no doubt about Pat and about it, Pat. And Pádraic is really with step tight, you know, as we've all Ireland champions, current all Ireland champions against the current league champions. And looking back on the league as a whole, Pádraic, a good one for Clare?
Yeah, definitely, Leo. And I suppose, like we're saying, just to reference, Keane O'Dea and Pearse Lillis played for New York and the championship may have started, but it really... I don't know where we might be described as hurling snobs, but it really starts this weekend, I think, in Cusack Park, and what a game to look forward to. But, and I suppose it is made all the better, and the appetite is whet a bit more because the Clare's league was so positive, and that's, you know, title in the bag. And so they're going into this in a very good space and fairly confident as a result of getting the title that was on offer and winning the National League for the first time since 2016. And like, I think the last time we were on, we were talking, what do we want to get out of the league? And it was to maybe find players, which we did. Okay, to be fairly critical, if you had one critique, it would be that maybe do we still have a plan B at 3 and 6? We don't. But we found, like, there's serious competition. If you look at it, okay, Adam Hogan is probably going to get in a cornerback, but then you've Conor Lean is fighting with Rory Hayes and Paul Flanagan. Like, Paul Flanagan doesn't really appear to be in the conversation, but was a guy that we felt was harshly maybe overlooked for an All-Star last year. He was in the mix, and now he's struggling to maybe get in and get a sniff of it, which shows that the league, that's all you really want. Great that the lads have won a national title, and it's a huge, I suppose, burden off Brian Lohan and Ken Ralph, who've been involved for the last couple of years, that, you know, nearly, you know, as was said before the Kilkenny game, Clare needed to win the National League more than Kilkenny did. So it was job done in that regard. But the big thing from the National League was for Clare to find players. And like from that example, we have Keane Galvin got a lot of game time during the league. Keith Smith got a lot of game time. Robin Mounsey started and seems to have disappeared. Daryl Owen is another one that is, seems to be in the equation for a starting spot as well. So like that's all we want. You know, really positive. You got what you wanted to get out of the league and have done it without Shane O'Donnell for the most part, barely the 35 minutes in the second half, without Tony Kelly, without Ryan Taylor. But I think, you know, while some people say bear a goal and assist, people, the critics are saying David Fitz might have had a quiet final, but he's had an outstanding league and is probably the most important player on the Clare team at the minute, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's probably no doubt, and a lot of credence that he's probably the player. He's probably the player of the National League, and I think the general consensus would agree with that, Parik.
Yeah, no, I think so. Like, he's really led the way, and like he. In fairness to Brian Logan, previous managers couldn't get the best out of him, but he has got David Fitz. And David Fitz is obviously, you know, it's coinciding with David Fitz hitting the peak of his power at 27, 28. And he's really delivering. Like, he's an absolute powerhouse when he starts going forward. And you can see it even on the football field when he's with it, playing with Ennis Diamond. He lifts them because once he cuts through the middle, with his stride and just power in the legs, and he's got, and the hurling field then, he's got the hurling. Quality of hurling that he's catching the ball. We saw the real turning point in the Tipperary game. Tip had got, you know, beginning to maybe flex their muscles a bit, had got a bit of a response to a fantastic clear start, and then Pitsy gets the ball, puts it in the back of the net, and that kind of kills him off. He's really stepped up as a leader.
Parik, you could say his displays, even though it's a totally different player, is part of the reason we haven't missed Tony Kelly much during the league. I think he's taken over the mantle of the 3, 4, 5 points a game, or maybe a goal. And, you know, that's something maybe hasn't been maybe mentioned too much, but he has been taking over the leadership in the attack, and he's thrown over the scores that maybe Tony Kelly might be otherwise be getting. I know he's a different way of doing it.
Yeah. Oh, and absolutely. I think, and I'm open to correction on this, but I think in the Cork game and the second round, I think he got 5 points each in both of those games. Like, remarkable telly for not a free kick, but for one player to be coming in with such a return is very impressive. And he kept it going throughout the league. And, you know, while, as I said, some critics were saying he maybe wasn't as involved in the final, but his contributions in the final were very significant. So, you know, I think he really has, you know, last year's championship, we could see, I think it was the Cork game, Cusick Park, you know, I would have described him after, he was nearly developing cult hero status, whereas now, in the terms of being a fan favourite, whereas now his performances have just gone up to another level in the league. So just fingers crossed he'll bring it forward to the championship, because it'd be a huge, huge asset to Clare.
There's no doubt that the fantasy hurling teams, he'd probably be featuring in 99.9% of all those teams for the championship. Parik, just looking again back at the league again before we get on to maybe go through the championship, but Gerald, and I know we're digressing a bit, Gerald Burns has made a point here earlier in the week that he feels that the All-Ireland final can go back to the old dates, to the September and that. Is that the time, maybe, is that due to the fact that maybe teams didn't give much credence to the league, or is he just going to popular opinion or public opinion?
I think it's a bit of kite flying, to be honest, Leo. Like, and I think the one thing to mention with the league is we have to credit Allianz, who have been fantastic sponsors of the competition and who have been very loyal to the GAA. So because of that loyalty, I guess they would have a big influence in terms of Croke Park. So I can't see anything being done to that competition. But best of luck, you know, Gerald Burns has done very well. I think his two speeches won him, after the league finals, won him a lot of new fans. But unless he's going to maybe manufacture a few extra weeks to the 52 that are already in the year, I can't see how it's going to function. Because, you know, if you talk to the players, the inter-county and club, they seem to be very happy with the model that is there. Obviously, we flagged a couple of times before, there's a couple of elite guys that are maybe in third level that are probably being put through the mill a bit too much with terms of the current system, so it still needs to be tweaked another bit. But, like, to be honest, I think there was an article written by Ray Curtis in one of the Sunday papers with very fancy prose and whatnot about why we need to be back in an All-Ireland final, and I think he mentioned Molly Malone, like, totally irrelevant. Like, you know, I think, and if people do go, while we would be critical of some of the club games, there's plenty of life in the GAA for the club scene, if we can keep, you know, keep trying. It's not perfect at the minute, but it's a lot better than what it was when, you know, you go back to 2005 and teams were playing, they had their first round in May of the Clare Senior Hurling Championship and they didn't know when their second round was. You know, like, no, there's 90% or whatever of our playing membership of the GAA are club players. And while the 10% in the league give us great joy and, you know, they're setting the conversation across the county, across the country for the start of the championship, I think, you know, Gareth Burns has done very well so far since he stepped into the role. But I think if he was to go tweaking the split, you know, tweaking it in what I would perceive to be a negative way, I think that would be a regressive step.
And before we leave that, Porry, do you think he's gone on a solo run here on this one? Because they doesn't, like, you know, he took an awful lot of discussion and that to get it, to get the championship to where we are now, you know, to be just turned at the drop of a hat, really.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'm not sure the context kind of behind it. Was he doing an interview or something and the question was put to him? But, look, I'd be, to be honest about it, I'd be a bit frustrated with some of my colleagues in the national media. Like, I think that are pushing their own agenda, that maybe it mightn't suit the likes of Roy Curtis to be going out to a club game and he's happy in the press box in Crow Park where there's nice sandwiches and soup, but he's fairly
prawn sandwiches
in the park or something, with great restaurants that he can maybe fork out a bit of money to go to the Sherwood or Sweet and Green, or I could keep mentioning loads of great cafes and restaurants in Ennis and across the country.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We are getting back to more serious things, Paul. You can look at tomorrow, it's just wet step at it. And as you said, Brian Lohan has plenty of options at his disposal now that, you know, that we've been crying out for maybe since the start of his campaign, you know what I mean? And look, it takes a fair man to come around. Obviously, he has made mistakes in the past and we hope all that have rectified. And the silverware is a shining light as well, you know. So is that monkey off the back as well, also defeating Kilkenny in a final is another, you know, maybe it isn't revenge, but look, it is more motivation to go forward after what happened in the last two seasons. But no better team than Limerick at this moment in time to put all that behind him and everything that has gone on. And they could cut you down fairly quick to size too.
Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, but it's a perfect litmus test to see where we're at. Like, you know, I agree with everything you said. Beating Kilkenny was significant from a psychological perspective as well, even when we factor in the finish was a bit nervy and they were coming at us, but we still got over the line, which is fantastic. But yeah, Limerick is going to be, I just think the one slight worry, while I'd be quietly confident going into the weekend, the one slight worry is there was a bit of a trend during the league that maybe in the third quarter at the start of games Clare kind of dipped a small bit, and then we saw it in the league final at the finish. We dipped a small bit and allowed Kilkenny, and that dip, Limerick will exploit you.
Yeah.
So we just have to make sure we don't, and if it does happen, that it's a very minor one and not for a long duration of time. So it's just that's the one, I suppose, big worry from a Clare perspective is if that dip does rear its head, that Limerick could punish us. But yeah, I think, you know, we do go into the weekend quietly confident, and the Ennis factor is a big thing. And the atmosphere that's going to be there is going to be electric. Fantastic that Éireann O'Dearn have confirmed the train services will be resumed. So, you know, there is going to be a bit of a buzz for the town, because the town does need to get a lift, which is one of the real wins of the round-robin series in the provincial, that we get these towns that maybe aren't getting the game, that get a chance to have an economic lift. And that's something, you know, while I was criticising maybe or questioning some of the things GAA have done, that round robin series is fantastic, and but it's just such a great game then to be looking forward to Sunday.
Absolutely. Just to go back to the injury situation again and the possibilities of people making it and not making it, we know everyone would like to believe Ryan Taylor won't be nearly ready for a long time. Tony Kelly, there's some doubt been expressed. Look, he could appear with 10-15 minutes to go, he could appear any time. If he does, brilliant. The other man I think we would need badly, and he's not been spoken about very much at all, is David McInerney, who hasn't been spoken about that much, has been seen very little in the league, and yet a lot of people would say he'd be the ideal man for Garrod Hegarty, and maybe that likes of Cian Galvin or someone like that would be less experienced for Hegarty. Have you any knowledge of David McInerney's progress or possibilities of starting, Porrick?
Yeah, as far as I know, he's available for selection for the weekend. which is
a bonus,
you know, league decision for management to make. Like Ian Galvin has had a league, you know, decent enough league, but this is going to be a massive jump if he was to be given the task. And I'd be inclined to agree with yourself, Pat, that, you know, if I had a choice between the two of them, I'd be going with David McInerney personally. While I am a big advocate of trying to develop players like Ian Galvin.
And Galvin had a very good league and he improved immensely as it went on.
He did, yeah. No, there's no denying that. And while I wouldn't be saying, oh, leave him on the line for the whole duration of the championship, I just think the cauldron atmosphere, like I always be of the belief since around 2018 when this Limerick team were coming on the scene, that Clare never feared him. You know, even though they're chasing a five in a row, Clare have never feared him. And you'd always, there's instances in these games, one of the players that always stands up physically and is never going to be bullied by Limerick is David McInerney. Like the amount of times we've seen him put his chest out, and whether it's Grod Hagerty or Keane Lynch, he's not a guy to back down from a fight. And I think he's the type of guy we definitely need to have in our 15 at the weekend.
And Parry, looking to the Tony Kelly situation, you know, obviously he hasn't played a game in a very, very long time. And look, I know he's training and that. What's your thoughts? Do you think that, you know, many people would say you can't go out without Tony Kelly? Look, he is probably one of the greatest players Clare has ever produced. You know, what do you do, even though he hadn't played, should you go with him and see how long you can get out of him? Or do you hold him in reserve and gamble maybe without him?
I think a lot of it's going to come down to whether Tony, what percentage if he's at. I would prefer to see him close to 100% because I absolutely agree he's one of the greatest hurlers to play the game, never mind to play for Clare. But if we take a step back and maybe a holistic approach or whatever you want to call it, Tony has had problems with his ankles. So if we're maybe short-sighted in our thinking and just throw him in for one game with the potential of causing more damage, I personally wouldn't be in favour of that. I think he needs to be right. If he's right, absolutely, use him. But if there's doubts about it and if he's not 100% comfortable, I'd nearly be holding him for this game if he's not right. But because I think, look, I've been praising this championship, but what we do know is it's a bare pitch and we are going to pick up other injuries regardless of the ones we have. So, look, it comes down to how well he is, and if he is at 100%, absolutely play him, bring him on. You know, the talk is that he's going to be listed among the substitutes, so he's obviously near back to himself. So that's kind of I'm not dodging the question, but that's what I do if I was in the position. I just think it's going to be very difficult against Limerick, and I know we could be under pressure if it doesn't go our way, but I wouldn't be putting him on to maybe setting back on his recovery then, you know. So
that's what Patrick, I was going to say to you, you know, is it maybe a match even though he could be or he's close to full fitness, you know, the fact that you mentioned there's a long championship to go there, yes, and we would envisage that we're going to be in there for the long haul, you know, you'd rather have him later on when it really gets to the business end of it than lose him on a game like tomorrow.
Absolutely, and it's in no way am I saying it's not a significant game, because it is very important to clear get a result, but it's just when you look at his track record of injuries with his ankle, that's when you kind of say we need this guy at the peak of his powers for as long as we can get him. So, you know, it'd be slightly different if, we'll say, he had broken a bone in his hand and he'd never broke. You know, it's just the fact that this injury seems to be recurring. If he's right, absolutely play him. But, you know, if he isn't there, we've spoken about David Fitz, how he's really stood up. It's going to be a chance for more leaders, you know, seeing if Mark Rogers is out in a deeper role. It's going to be other guys are going to have to step up. And that's kind of, you know, here in Limerick, it was always, oh, next man up. And they've won without, like, fairly impressive that they could win All-Irelands without Sean Finn, without Keane Lynch, Declan Hannan. So, we have shown we're able to win in the league without Tony Kelly. If we can do it in the championship is another question. But, again, it's just, if he's right, play him. And if there's maybe strong-ish doubts about him, we have to think we need to have this guy. There's no point in him going on and going backwards. You know, we need to have him. We need to be winning every game in Munster, but we need to have him for as long as we can in the championship.
And looking in, Parry, Shane O'Donnell made a fleeting appearance the last half an hour. You know, started very impressively maybe showed a lack of mesh flexors, which is very much understanding, but he lit the crowd and made a couple of, you know, some great moves. Your thoughts on Shane? Do they go with him from the beginning tomorrow, or do they hold him in reserve?
Yeah, I personally would have him in from the start. I think he just brings so much to the table. I would start him personally. I think, again, just to go back, slightly thought it was harsh on Ian Galvin to be Ian Galvin was substituted at half time in the league final, and he seems to be whipped very early, and like, we saw his value to Clonlara last year in the club championship. But like, I've no problem with Shane Donnelly. I just think if management on that particular call, the lift it would have given the crowd if Shane O'Donnell came on a couple of minutes into the second half, even with 37 minutes played in the game, if they were to make the call, just like, it would have given the crowd a huge lift. Whereas, you know, the ball was thrown in for the second half and some people didn't realise Shane O'Donnell was on the field.
That's
true. You know, so it's just possibly missed a trick, I think, in that regard. But for Sunday and Hugh the Clark, I'd start Shane O'Donnell, yeah.
Barry, there's probably 8 or 9 forwards with a shout of starting based on the league performances and based on previous times as well. I suppose we know Fitzgerald will start. I'd say you're right, Shane O'Donnell will start, Peter Duggan will start, Mark Rogers will probably start. After that then, there's a few other possibilities. You know, you mentioned Ian Galvin, David Reedy, of course.
McCarthy.
Of course, Aidan McCarthy probably could become the free taker, it looks like, based on what he did in recent times. So I suppose basically it's down to the fact that you could maybe start without two of those very good forwards, and they could have a very, very big say in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's as important to have 5 people that are come on that are going to bring care to another level. So our substitutes are going to have to be very effective, and we have to be strategic in how we do that. I think Aidan McCarthy really impressed me in the Kilkenny game. Just like, the ball was going in there, he might have been sliding on one knee, but he was secure in primary possession the first time. But there's just, like, again, overall I've been very impressed with him, but there's just a bit of a trend in that he's maybe lashing back. I would hope management maybe spotted this and have a chat with him, because there's a possibility there could be a bit of a red card for one of those lashbacks. I recall it down in Waterford, he got involved in a tangle and maybe gave a flick in the Kilkenny game as well. So we just have to be careful as well with regard to that. But I think he's bringing great aggression, but it's maybe making sure doesn't reach boiling point, you know.
Yeah, so. And again, apart, unfortunately, we have to, you know, Cullum Lyons is the referee, and you know, Cullum he's around a while. You know, you're not going to hoodwink this fella. You know, and decisions have gone either look at for and against you in the past team. So look at, you're not going to get away with anything at this stage.
No, and that's like, we just have to be smart and have to have the thinking cap on and not give the officials an opportunity to maybe give you a red card or give you a yellow, which could be a second yellow. You just have to be very smart. Like, we get, you know, there's one or two players that maybe came on against Kilkenny, over eager and silly flicks and frees given away, and like, at inter-county level, even though clear during the league free taking something that nearly needs to be perfected, but like, if you're giving away frees, they're going to be punished. And then looking ahead to the first round of the Munster Championship, if we give away frees in our half forward line, Jeremy Burns is going to score them. So just discipline is going to be a big thing, and not giving Cullum Lyons an excuse to give a soft free or a handy free to Limerick. So we just have to be very, very, very smart.
And Parik, before we get away from the Clare team there, obviously you kind of have mentioned the backs. Obviously it's going to be Flanagan or Hayes or Lean, depending. It's probably down to between Hayes and Lean. Would you agree with that?
I think so, yeah. But I would just personally be maybe a bit disappointed for Paul Flanagan that he, you know, isn't as in the mix.
Yeah.
He had done very well for us last year. Similar with Rory. I think Rory, you know, a lot of people give out about the goal. You know, had been very good for us as well. I think Adam Hogan has an exceptional league, so he deserves to be slotted in, whereas I think it's between the lads, and maybe I would say management could give a nudge to Conor Lean, but I could be wrong.
And then obviously the halfback then is picking, kind of Mullis is picking himself with John, flanked by Damon Ryan, another head of a fantastic league, and hopefully David McInerney. Then Ilan Parker, it looks like, is it Cathal Malone and Darragh Lohan for you?
I think that's what it's going to be for management anyway, that it'll be Cathal Malone and Darragh Lough. And I think Keane Galvin is still potentially in with a shout for the seventh spot with David McInerney. We'll see how that goes. I would say, I would expect that the midfield pairing is going to be Cathal Malone and Darragh Lough. And now, I'm kind of going back to what I was saying with the finisher, that maybe Shane Amore is being viewed in a finisher role coming in there. Whereas I think a lot of people have maybe laughed and scoffed at me, but I said, I think he personally should be in midfield.
You've made that point here before. Yeah,
to the table, you know, and he just has physicality and speed and everything.
The engine, yeah.
Look, to be fair, Tim Darragh Lough didn't really put foot wrong either in the league, bar the Kilkenny game in Hughes Park. So maybe, you know, look, I'm big for saying, you know, we need to give the lads a chance. So I think Darragh deserves his chance for the first round against Limerick, and you know, hopefully it'll work out between him and Cathal Malone in the middle.
Now, more about Clare, we got a bit about our neighbours over the Treaty side with Limerick, and obviously injury problems there as well. And look, you can't, if a lot of people say if Limerick had been in the league semi final, if there's a horse race in Leopardstown or the Curragh, the stewards inquiry would have been called, you know, how poorly they performed, and to set off the first 15-20 minutes going well and then totally capitulate. What's your thoughts on Limerick? Limerick really, you know, obviously they're going for the five in a row. They want to get off to a good start tomorrow. They don't want to be under pressure trying to find results at the end like they were last year.
Yeah, and I think they'll have to take that learning from last year, that they were very, very lucky to end up in the position they ended up in. So they're going to have to you know, try to do that. We've seen leagues in the past that John Kiely has experimented here and there, but always seems to revert to tried and trusted, despite you know, them saying that Limerick's panel is the greatest panel. But yet, we only seem to trust in maybe certain lads to get a starting spot. That said, I think Cathal O'Neill is possibly going to get in the half-back line. I think that kind of, to be honest, that has kind of nearly excited me. It's probably too strong a word, but just seeing him in a new role and getting the opportunity to enter the fold, because we've kind of seen what he has done, be it with Eric Scullin at underage level. So it would be nice to see him get a chance. Another one that could potentially get in is Donnacha O'Dolig at corner forward. So again, like, just I suppose on the matchups, if that was to be the case, it's either Conor Lean, Rory Hayes, or Paul Flanagan, whichever one of them
would be on
here. I would probably go on O'Dolig. And then, like, I think just given the form he's in, and the gander is definitely up, I'd put Adam Hogan on Aaron Gillan. And then, you know, kind of leave Conor Cleary with Seamus Flanagan. And I you know, maybe some people might say it's a gamble, but I just think the form Hogan is in, and you could just see the last year was exceptional in the league final. In Simple Stadium, and you know, as he maybe noticed the second or third ball, he could see how much of a lift he was giving the crowd. It's kind of similar to Owen Gunning's performances with the Clare Miners. That's what it resembled me of. So, yeah, and I just think the crowd would really be behind Hogan if he was getting out and winning. And that's not to say Conor Cleary hasn't done well on Aaron Gillan in recent games, because he has. But I just think that personally something I would try and see how it goes.
Parig, is there any bits, I know we kind of slightly hinted at it there, but the Limerick squad now, or this team is together, say, 6 years, 7 years, and there won't be a huge change in personnel tomorrow from the team that won the first All-Ireland back in, 2017, was it? There'll be a couple, obviously, there's 3 or 4 changes, but now, our question could be answered tomorrow, very, very, very definitely and very strongly. But is there a danger that Kiely and his team are letting it kind of grow a little bit old together, and maybe some of the older guys just mightn't have the same hunger, and maybe there aren't enough younger lads driving them on? Or is that maybe a little bit risky to be saying at this stage? You know, that they are pretty similar. It's easy enough name 13 of the positions anyway, say. So is it clutching a straw to say maybe that Limerick are, they're in it a while, there's a few of them have a mileage up, and maybe there haven't been enough lads pushing to pressurise them, their places?
I wouldn't entirely agree nor disagree, but I just, and nothing against him, I thought he's definitely contributed a lot, but, and I do rate him very highly, but just when you're seeing Graham Mulcahy be one of the subs that is still coming in as opposed to an Adam English, that maybe is telling you, I don't know, because Adam English with Doon has been very good.
That's one of the things I was thinking of now, is Mulcahy is still a big part of it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just, and like, we are aware that Limerick's under-20s didn't do well, and Limerick Minors, with their supposedly expert analyst manager, Shane Dowling, lost to Clare as well during the week. So there may be this great academy. Is it producing as much hurlers? Maybe not, if they're not contesting. Obviously, the guys are there, a once-in-generation, and are an exceptional group of players, but you need to be, you go back to Brian Cody's time, there was always a couple of lads coming in, new lads shaking it up. And I won't say Brian Cody didn't have loyalty, because he was very loyal to guys, but he put the best team out as well, you know, and he constantly shook it up, and you kind of have to do that as well. Like, hear platitudes and stuff after matches that would say, oh, every player is important in the squad, but kind of unless Kylie starts maybe changing things, is it just talk? So it will be interesting if there are a couple of injuries, who comes in, and for the big games, who they do go with. But I think, like that, I think, okay, Adam English is a guy that could get in ahead of Donoghue O'Dolig as well in that corner forward spot. But like, it will be interesting to see if English and Cathal O'Neill are guys, are they actually given their chance? Because we've seen Barry Brown, Colin Coughlin, done very well and stuff with UL, but hasn't, he's got his couple of chances in the league. But at the end of the day, if he really trusted in Championship by the Limerick management, I don't think he is.
Yeah, I suppose the big question for me, Patrick, with the Limerick setup is, and you know, obviously they've injuries. O'Donovan, I think O'Donovan is the unsung hero for Limerick, and you know, I'm not sorry not to see him playing from a Clare point of view. Obviously, you'd like to see all your top players playing. I would imagine maybe that has guaranteed maybe Declan Hennon to get in with O'Donoghue staying in the middle of the field. Also, the Kyle Hayes position. Where is Kyle Hayes going to play now? Given that if they're going to give O'Neill his run as wing back, where does Kyle Hayes go?
Well, he's such an effective player, he could go forward as well. You know, that's when he came onto the scene initially, it was in the forward. So this could be the rabbit they pull out of the hat. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Like, it will also be very interesting to see the off the field events. Like, there will be jeers and stuff, and how Kyle Hayes reacts. He's going to be maybe on. He may be targeted by players throughout the Championship with sledging or whatever you want to call it. So it'll be interesting to see that. And, you know, drama off the field generally does have an impact on a setup as well. Like we saw in Clare, you know, going back to 2014, 2015, the Podge Collins, the Davy O'Halloran. Those little things, they might seem little, but they do have an impact on a setup. So it will be interesting to see, and it's kind of, you know, they're just little factors and you weigh them into the equation. And people, I agree with you, Darragh, O'Donovan is going to be a huge loss. And I think was more the more if you were to weigh it up, who was more important, midfielder Darragh O'Donovan or Will O'Donoghue? I would say Darragh O'Donovan. So I think Will O'Donoghue could potentially be exploited in terms of discipline if Cullum Lyon is keeping an eye on things. I think Will O'Donoghue is a player that's prone to maybe get away with a couple of things that not everyone gets away with, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and funny, we've mentioned the referee from both sides, so I look at, he's going to have a big job. Patrick, at the end of the day, I'm trusting, and as we are all here, that hopefully home advantage is going to swing in for us.
Yeah, I think so. Just the one thing, as I mentioned, is that kind of blip third that was happening at the start of the second half in some of the earlier league games, and then finished against Kilkenny. We just can't afford to do one of them, but I think, quietly confident and optimistic that Clare will start with a win, because it is very important. You do not want to be going down to Cork needing to get a win and needing to get a result. That's, you know, so it does put a huge emphasis on what is going to be a massive Championship occasion. There's such excitement and anticipation for it and such demand to get in that I understand some long-serving members of the Clare media won't even get access to Hewlett Park because there's such demand from all levels of the fourth estate.
Oh. I think there'll have to be another call made to that engineer, whoever appeared during the week, fair play to him that he got 1,000 or whatever it is extra. Surely he'd be able to get a few more the media people in Pádraig. And that takes us on to the Cork game, as you spoke about. You know, you don't want to be going to Páinc Uí on the following Sunday trying to get needing a result. And Cork and Waterford, you know, in Walsh Park also tomorrow. And really, if there's such a big build up and a big hype regarding Clare and Limerick, nothing can be further but the opposite for Cork and Waterford, Pádraig.
Yeah, no, that's going to be... I think that game is like significant for Clare, as Clare versus Limerick is. And it's a very hard one to call. I think Waterford's manager, David Fitzgerald, is under huge pressure for this weekend to get a result. Because I think the tide could turn against them fairly quickly if they don't get a result in terms of their supporters, who haven't been coming out in force. I think, did they get under 4,000 for some of their games that they were hosting? So they're under massive pressure going into the weekend to get a result. And I think the first round is when we could potentially see Waterford maybe cause a surprise or something. It is, you know, because just the way they struggled in the round robin, psychologically, they need to start with a win to, you know, strengthen their beliefs.
Pádraig, I agree with you. I think unless Waterford win tomorrow, it's over, really.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I'd be as bold as to predict if Waterford lose to Cork and maybe pick up, I think there's a potential that David Fitz mightn't see out the championship as manager of Waterford. That's how I would predict from the outside looking in. That's the mood I can nearly gauge in Waterford with regards to hurling and their style of play. Like, a lot of criticism after their league. So yeah, they really, really need to get a result against Cork. And it's hard to know at Cork. Someone was pointing out that Pat Ryan was maybe playing mind games during the week by saying, "Oh, I'd bite your hand off to get third place." You know, so he's kind of bigging it up with all between Clare and Limerick. So that game is really going to be fascinating, in my opinion. And it's going to be a big, big bearing on how Clare's championship goes.
And would you imagine, Pádraig, also, that there'll have to be some kick in Waterford, you know, home venue, and obviously the crowd are not in support of the regime, or whatever you would like to call it on there. And look, at Davey has done it before with other teams. He could have them hyped up, and they could turn over Cork quite easily too. It could happen.
Oh no, it definitely could. And I suppose one of the things that Davey does well is kind of suggesting people are against us and everyone is against us, but definitely everyone in Waterford seems to be against them at the minute. So I think if there's going to be something in Waterford, we're going to see it against Cork in the first round. And that's when, like, so yeah, I think that one has a big one. And again, we just don't seem to know Cork. There's just question marks. Like, we don't know what we're going to get. I see Sean Toomey's in to make his debut. Robbie O'Flynn is back from injury and is named on the bench. So it's going to be interesting. Mark Coleman, I mentioned at the start, have Clare filled back up for full back and centre back, but like, if Cork solved defensive problems, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think they have. So we'll find out fairly quickly in the championship if they have. But that one is going to be, it's going to be two fantastic, hopefully, games this weekend in the Munster Championship.
And Pádraig, I know it's probably hard to say, predict why or whether, but from your own point of view, which result in Walsh Park would maybe be better from a Clare point of view, supposing we do need some points down the line, or, you know, maybe do need a win later on in the round robin, going to Cork after they've lost, or going to Cork after they've won, for instance, you know, can you see a result down there that might suit Clare better?
Well, you could argue the case for both.
Yeah, you could.
If Cork lost or if Cork won, I think the better result for Clare would be if Waterford won, because I think Cork's heads are maybe down, whereas it's been well documented, this word called Corkness. If they get a result against Waterford, they'll be confident, they'll come into Corky Keith, they'll say that Clare don't like travelling to Corky Keith. So I think for Clare personally, it would be if Waterford win. Cork might be a small bit wounded, and we can you know, try capitalise on that and get a win down in Portkey for what will be another difficult game. But I think we would need a Waterford win with two clear, and that's not because there's a 6 mile bridge man over the Dacia.
Yeah. And I suppose Cork probably will still start with the likes of Harnady, Conor Lehane and Patrick Horgan, specifically those in the forward line. And you could look at it both ways as well. Patrick, you could say very experienced players who could rise it on the big day, but also in the tight confines of Walsh Park, they might just find the going maybe, with the younger lads running like Toomey or Hayes or those around them, and Barrett as well and Connolly, maybe the tight going and... The legs aren't as young as they used to be, and some of those lads, they might just find it going tough down there if Waterford are really up for it.
Yeah, no, I think the experience will be a help to them with the likes of Harnady and Pat Horgan. I think they need to use it and utilise it as something, but like as we're saying, I think the more the pressure is on the Waterford players, like they need to really stand up and show there's a kick in them, because you would be worried if it doesn't go their way that they could have another whimper of a championship, and well, that's not good for Waterford.
Yeah, you reckon? I reckon the same thing. If they lose at home in the game where there's no points yet and everything is up for grabs, I think that they'll have no hope at all winning on the road. And I'd say that could be as your curtains for them as well. I think you're right.
It could be just a McCarthy episode all over again. Yeah. You never know down there, Parik. Before we let you go, turning to Leinster, right? And you know, really. To me, something has to be done with the championship when you look at the games that are on this weekend. Kilkenny and Antrim, Galway and Westmeath, you know, two non-events really. But the third game, Wexford and Dublin, massive championship game for both sides.
Yeah, and it always, Wexford-Dublin has tended in this format to always be a decent enough game. Always tit for tat, one of them, Dublin might get one over on Wexford or Wexford might come on back. Yeah, Wexford had been unlucky with injuries during the league. Which kind of maybe hindered Keith Roster, but it was good to see that he kind of has adapted a new style of play as well. So, like, that's one of the big things, is they have to play to their strength and see, you know, the guys like Conor McDonald who were possibly restricted in previous systems. So, that one is going to be a good game. As you said, the other two are going to be non-events for Galway and Kilkenny. So, yeah, but I think where it's at is definitely the Munster Championship this weekend.
No doubt about it. Parik, also underage Clare during the week, second, 2 out of 2. Good win for Brian O'Collins, 2 out of 2, 100% record, with the Miners going well and defending their championships again. Last weekend down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, unfortunately, the under-20s lost to Cork, put up a great battle, were going well, an unfortunate red card, very harsh, it seems, and, you know, but... Everything underage Clare hurling is still very much in a major high.
Yeah, I guess two things on it. Like the Miners, I won't say they're defying the odds or surprising people, but the fact that there was only 3 survivors from the All-Ireland and Munster winning team, and one of them that featured regularly in Mark O'Brien, obviously Conor Ralph and Harry Doherty were part of that as well. Like, that's really good, encouraging that they're doing that. And from what I can gather, a lot of the panel, the approach has been made that there's a nice chunk of guys that are eligible again for the grade next year. So I don't, maybe the expectation wasn't as high with Brian O'Connell's team for this year, but there's 2 wins from 2 games and in a very strong and commanding position. And then if you look at the 20s, like, I think, was it 7 of the starting team against Cork had been on that minor team from the year before. So we're maybe, I think Terence would admit it as well, we're maybe blooding them in a bit earlier than we'd like due to injuries. But they've gone so far, and again, I'm not one, definitely not a person that's a fan of moral victories, but to totally contradict myself, it was for Clare, when you consider they lost by 40 points to Cork at Minor, and it was only a 6-point defeat in Páirc Uí Chaoimh on Friday. So that is a clear sign that there is progress being made, and the gap is being cut. Shane Woods obviously was a loss, I think.
Big loss, huge loss.
He had done well in the first round. So, but again, it's just, you know, there's signs of improvement and green horns and green shoots or whatever you want to call it. So that's reason to be optimistic, I think. And as I mentioned earlier, if you look at Limerick Minor and under 20, compare it with Clare, I think we're in a stronger position at those 2 grades as results seem to indicate.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And look at Pádraig, as always, it's good to talk to you here on Scariff Bay Queen's Radio. You know, your pints are mid, concise and clear, and we look forward to hearing much more of you as the championship progresses. Good to meet you, good Pádraig.
Very much, Leon. Thanks, Pádraig. Hopefully we'll start the weekend with a win for our Clare footballers in Dungarvan too.
Here, here.
Good, man. Yeah, we echo those sentiments entirely. Thanks, Pádraig.
Thank you, Pádraig.
And once again, congratulations to the Miners on their win during the week. But hopefully, unfortunately, as Mark O'Brien, you know, one of the star players of the team and one of the great Miners of the team from last year, picked up an injury. We hope that we see Mark back on the pitch sooner rather than later. And we wish all the boys the very best of luck, as Pádraig said, with the footballers and the hurlers this weekend as they embark on the Munster Championship. Talking about another kind of a championship, Pat, last Saturday, La Rochelle and Leinster, very much one way traffic, Pat.
It was, and I suppose if you take an overall Irish point of view, it was good to see the change. I know Munster fans don't obviously like to see Leinster making progress. However, if you look at it, I suppose, coldly, Leinster, different team, different approach altogether, way more physical. Maybe had a couple of extra physical guys in that they don't normally have. But I thought the Leinster backs were outstanding. I mean, to nearly more or less. And that was with Keenan missing at the last minute. You know, huge, probably one of the best fullbacks in the world. Certainly one of the top two or three fullbacks in the world out. I suppose you have to say, and then we hadn't much time for Ross Byrne was a revelation. His kicking from the tee was absolutely brilliant.
He got a handy run, though, Pat.
He got a handy run, and I agree he did. I think Rog hasn't got the same power or the same intensity at his disposal as he had for the last few years. I know they're not going as well as they used to be in France. Obviously, that they're not hardly in the top five or six or seven, are they, in the French League? So they are probably a bit on the way down. Like the Skelton, when you see Furlong lifting him up and planting him down the ground again gently, you know, you kind of knew then that something was about to happen big time. Skelton had been the absolute thorn in their side for the last few years. But yeah, look at good coaching from Leinster. Ian Bowers, that I pronounce it.
He's had his effect.
Effect on it was massive. Their first up tackle was unbelievable. Chop tackle, and Will Connors came in, did what he had to do. Then you were able to bring in a World Player of the Year from a year or two ago. Vendor Fleer let's come in. A bench like that is unbelievable. That's with, and they were also without James Ryan, you must remember, and without Ringrose. So, I mean, we know that's the key. But look, Leinster, who were ready for the fray, sick of being beaten and being bullied, and I think they just stood up for themselves. And their main, the finishing was excellent. As Byrne played his part, he linked up well now with Byrne. In fairness, his passing was quite good. His tactical kicking good enough as well. And of course, when you have the likes of Lowe to finish, a player like that can finish a half chance. Again, you know, the likes of Sheehan. The front row at the start was very, very good, the scrums. However, one little Achilles tendon Leinster may have is that their bomb squad front row that comes in afterwards isn't within a necessary of them. And late in any game, after they changed, if they do take off Furlong and Porter and maybe Sheehan, no, Kelleher is okay, but I don't think, in fairness to Keane Healy or
LFOA,
however you pronounce it, they're not in the same league anymore. So that might be an Achilles heel for them. But look, overall, very, very good display. And I suppose from an Irish point of view, good to see Irish players stand up to those giant and tough and physical and talented La Rochelle lads.
And I suppose even with Humphreys coming in now, he's a bit of a job to do. And already, plenty of nice 13 central contacts out there, 10 Leinster, 1 Munster, 1 Connacht.
Well, that's the one.
There's a serious imbalance.
It's going to prolong the advantage Leinster have, isn't it?
It's a serious imbalance.
It is. But look, we'd rather see an Irish team winning it than not. When our own lads can't get any further, and hopefully that'll be started up before too long, hopefully.
Yeah, and turning from one sport to another, we're now joined by a man who was here with us a number of weeks ago, and there's a major week ahead, maybe not on the field, but off the field in terms of the draft for the American football. And we're joined by our American football expert, Luke Fleeman. Luke, you're welcome once again.
Far from an expert, Leo, but I will try and talk a bit of shite for a few minutes and tell you about the draft. Yeah, next Thursday night, probably about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, if you want a bit of entertainment, because as you know, the Yanks do razzmatazz better than anybody else could. So all the way from Detroit, so Eminem might come out and sing a song for you as well. The draft takes place. So it's sort of like it's time to poor get off the pot now for the teams that are in sort of need of players, and the first round takes place. Like, it's all designed for TV now, so 32 picks, first round will take 3 hours. So that's the first night's entertainment. Then I think they give 15 minutes per pick is what they're allowed, so it's basically, you know, the teams will take whatever length of time to make their pick, and then the boys have to analyse it, and then they take an ad, and then they go on to the next one. Round two, it's 10 minutes per pick, and then after 3, 4 and 5, it's literally the sort of, oh yeah, okay, every 5 minutes off you go, let's, you know, because then people lose interest at that stage. But yeah, it's an interesting year. You know, we spoke previously, it is a year where quarterbacks, it's generally recognised that it's a good quarterback year, it's a very good year for wide receivers. And again, you have teams that are in need of a quarterback, you have teams that are looking for a quarterback, but they're not in the right place. So I'll just give you an example. The Chicago Bears, the Washington Commanders and the Patriots are the top three, have the 1, 2 and 3 pick in the draft. The three of them need quarterbacks. The Bears have got rid of their quarterback. The Commanders had no one, and the Pats got rid of Mac Jones. And just to go back and talk about a year, the draft, and this is, you have to bear in mind, the draft is not an exact science. You have lads that can get rated in college, and they can be said, oh, they're really good, really good. The best college player, one of the best college players, a quarterback, Tim Tebow. He couldn't do jack in the professional league. Great in college. Absolutely fabulous player in college. But couldn't do it.
Again, I think we might have asked you that last night. On the dropout from college.
Yeah.
And look, at the all have aspirations. They all think they're going to be making this. What is... The dropout is very high, isn't it?
Well, you get about, I think, 2% of college players get drafted.
Oh, yeah.
And the other 98%, that's the last game of football they'll never play again. I'm just going to go. We have a few minutes to talk. I'm going to go back.
I want to ask you about the Irish guys as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the 2021 draft. Bear in mind, this was during COVID, and you would think there was classes. One generational quarterback, right? Trevor Lawrence. So Lawrence was drafted once, number one. He went to the Jacksonville Jags. He's good, but he hasn't been, I would class, a generational quarterback. He's prone to getting injured, has good potential, but he, you know, some guys haven't done it from the start. He hasn't really done it from the start, but he's still good.
He's still good.
Now, this is where things go downhill pretty quick. Number two, the Jets, Zach Wilson.
Say no more.
Number three, Trey Lance, 49ers. Boom, gone. Yeah. And you think about it, but for the fact that the 49ers sort of landed the mother load with Brock Purdy in, you know, Mr. Irrelevant in the last round of the draft, they were screwed, right? And people will argue that Purdy is sort of like a system quarterback and he's not that good, but bear in mind that the 49ers have loads of talent around the place. So if he's
done the job, though.
Oh, if he's adequate, the boys will do it. So, you had three quarterbacks, first three picks. Two out of three of them are busts. So, you generally have the chance that one out of three of the top three that go this year will be sort of with a different team within 4 years. That's generally what you have. I'll just give you a few other ones. Number five in that draft, Jamar Chase to the Bengals, wide receiver. He was the first wide receiver. Jalen Waddle, he's with the Dolphins. Two good players. But you go down the line, inside linebacker, Micah Parsons, probably the best inside linebacker in the game at the minute, drafted 12 with the Cowboys. You know, so this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You could have lads that sort of might fall a bit, or they're not picked at the top because the teams that are picking mightn't have needs at that players. Like, we drafted Mac Jones at 15. He was the fifth quarterback in the draft, but we needed a quarterback because we were trying to replace some lad that played us for years, who sort of had the initials G-O-A-T, right? And that didn't work out well. But, you know, you look at some of the other players that are there, and it works. I'd say maybe a third, generally a third. You saw the strike rate with quarterbacks, and it'll generally be around that again. So we could be back here in a few years having the debate, and you start to tell me which one of them is going to make it. I don't really know, because what you could call the best sort of potential talent in it, he seems to be a bit of a...
But Luke,
with issues.
Luke, they don't know themselves really, do they?
No, you've lads that... they can be great in college, but they just can't do it. And it can be the system that they play in college. Now, the college game has... there used to be a huge gap between the college game and the professional game, but the professional game has adapted in more recent years to the college game, right? Because you generally have the wide receivers are the lads that basically are playing basketball and sort of they're good at basketball, but we might do better. Because you talk about catch radius, that they can catch a ball, you know, all that.
You also mentioned off air there, Luke, a bit might point, just that there can be regional differences in how good a player is. A player who plays in a sunny part of the, you know, climate might be used up north freezing conditions. Yeah. You know, he mightn't be as good.
Yeah, the ultimate hot weather team are the Miami Dolphins, who will generally start off in a blaze of glory, and come December when the weather starts to get a few degrees less.
When the gloves are needed.
When the gloves come on. And, you know, you try and send them into Arrowhead in January, it's not going to, you know, end well, you know. But I said, the Bears, the Commanders, the Patriots are the top three teams this year. The top three quarterback that are probably going to go 1-2-3, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. So they're the three names you're going to hear. Okay. Now, there's one that, you know, it's a little bit like, I don't know, would it be the Davy Fitz school of we're sort of generating a bit of hype, or have they a good agent? J.J. McCarthy. Michigan won, we'll say, the college championship this year.
Relations in Cork, they say.
Well, he might have. But
Aina Kilnamona.
Yeah. But a good player, but there's also, he went from being potentially maybe a mid-second round pick. They now think he will be the fourth quarterback taken, and there's a chance he could go top seven. Okay,
so
just bear him in mind. Now, there are a few very good wide receivers. So the names you're going to hear, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. Friday morning, picking up on the names, they're six names that will be drafted, I would say, in the top 12. They'll be the big names. But Harrison is a fantastic prospect at wide receiver. And generally, if there's enough of them sort of say that, some of the analysts will say, he's good, but, you know, he mightn't make it to the pros. They've all said this guy has the capability, because the one thing you do, separation. You can sort of shove your man off the line and pace to burn and sort of separation.
He has it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Nabers is good as well. Nabers is how they pronounce it, but it's spelled N-A-B-E-R-S.
Oh.
We'd probably call it Nabers. But
whoever is going to nab him is going to have a fair...
exactly, yeah. So it'll be good. You asked about the Irish lads. The chances are they're not... kicking isn't sort of a, you know, it's not a sexy position. Our punters would say they're probably two least sexy spots in it. They're not, if you're sort of thinking that county footballers are going to be drafted in the first or second round, forget it. If anything happens, it's going to be after the draft, because we'd say they pick, each team gets their picks. You get to 230 odd picks, and then what happens is that there are lads that are sort of picked up, we'll say, in free agency, or there are lads that aren't drafted. Mm. But that their teams will pick them up afterwards, and you get some jewels in the crown there as well. So there's a fairly good chance. Like if you look at, we'll say, the rugby player for Wales,
Zemma Jones,
he got a contract right before the draft. Now, I know he'd be sort of playing with the same type of ball, all right. And but interestingly, there is a school of thought that says they're not going to use him as a kicker. that they could use him as a wide receiver.
Yeah, that's he's primarily signed for.
Or
yeah.
a running back. He mightn't be sort of the lad that's going to run into the line, but sort of say try and get him into space. You know, okay. So it'll be interesting.
And that concludes our Sports and Show here today on Scariff Community Radio on 88.3 FM and 92.7 FM in association with Dell Credit Union. Once again, thanks to co-presenter Pat McNamara. Thanks to our guest on GA, Parik McMahon. And thanks to Luke for doubling up as our American football analyst and our producer on the show tonight. And so, lads, we all look forward to the weekend and we hope everyone has a good weekend and that Clare come out with victories in both the hurling and the football over the weekend. And all that remains is me, Leo Dial. Until we meet again, it's Ben O'Tay, August Lawn.